We've explained in the past, Amalek was different than all our other enemies, insofar that all the other enemies we had, basically, or all the world up until Amalek, were either idol worshippers or believers in God. They believed in something. Either they believed in many gods, or believed in one God. Amalek brought to the world atheism, belief in nothing. And we explained that's why the whole world was afraid when the Red Sea split and we went through and the Egyptians were drowned. They didn't want to touch us. They were afraid that, you know, who knows what's going to happen to them if they start up with the Jewish people. Look at this power that protects them. They may not have believed in God, but they did believe in sea gods, wind gods, whatever, and this God is pretty potent. So we better watch out. These people have some power that is protecting them. But Amalek were atheists. They believed in nothing. And therefore, what did they say when the Red Sea split? It was a coincidence. An accident. Right? Just a happening. And therefore, they weren't afraid. Why should they be afraid? It's going to happen again. Accidents don't happen twice. Statistically, it's probably not going to happen again. So, therefore, they weren't afraid. And therefore, they jumped in and they cooled us off in the eyes of the rest of the nation. That's why Amalek is called Rashis. They're a beginning and we're a beginning. It's like a tug of war. They're at one end, extreme. They don't believe in anything. And the other end of the world is us. We believe in God. And the middle are all the idol worshippers who believe in all these other gods. Amalek is trying, like a tug of war, to pull all the rest of the world to atheism. And we're trying to pull them out of idolatry into belief in God. And it's a struggle between us and Amalek. The stronger they are, the weaker we are. The stronger we are, the weaker they are. And that's why Amalek in Gematria is Suffolk, doubt. Because the stronger they are in their atheism, in their total denial of any godliness, anything in this world, not even idolatry, nothing, then it weakens our faith. And the stronger we are in our belief in God, it weakens them. So this is the struggle that goes on. So whenever the Jewish people have doubts whether God is there controlling the world, and they think that maybe the world is being controlled by haphazard, accidental, social, economic, political forces, blind forces, then we are vulnerable to Amalek. The first time Amalek came around is when the Jewish people questioned, is God with us or not? They were thirsty in the desert, they needed water, and they came to Moshe Rabbeinu and they said, is God with us or not? Is he going to provide us with water or not? Now these are people who saw miracles constantly. Like we said, they saw the Anon and they saw the Eish. What was the doubt? So the Mefarshim explained, they had the following doubt. Maybe God is only personally involved in the world with miracles. When you need a sea to be split, God's there. When you need a drink of water, God gave over the world on a Shabbos clock called nature. And he doesn't get involved. He just lets it naturally take its course. That's what they thought. Maybe natural things don't come directly from God. God just set like a natural, you know, course of events and he leaves it up to nature. But it's not that God is involved in everything individually, directly. When we're not sure if God is involved in nature, then we're vulnerable to Amalek, who doesn't believe that God is even involved with miracles. There's no such thing as miracles. Just a coincidence. Just a quirk. In the time of Purim, it was the same thing. We were in doubt whether God was still with us. We went into Golis, and they felt that God, unlike what we said in the beginning, that God didn't abandon us, and he took out his anger on stones and wood to shock us into return, and he went with us into Golis. They thought that God basically despised us, got rid of us, and finished. And they felt that since God is no longer involved with us, now we have to worry about who is running this world, basically vis-a-vis us, Nebuchadnezzar. So we have to bow down to his idol. Because if I bow down to his idol, I'll get bad in God's eyes, because God's not involved anymore. So I better worry about Nebuchadnezzar. And they did. They bowed down to Nebuchadnezzar's idol. And it led them also to enjoy Ahasuerus' party, which we'll get to in a second. So here's another part of history where Jews weren't sure that God was involved with them directly, and therefore they were vulnerable to Amalek. Now let's enlarge upon that. Amalek, again, these atheists, the way that an atheist looks at us is different than the way an idol worshiper looks at us. The greatness of the Jewish people, the Torah says, are two things. One is that we have a special closeness to God, that He hears our prayers as a nation all the time, and in every situation the Jewish people persevere as a people. Many people unfortunately suffer and are killed, but we came out of Mitzrayim as a people, even though many Jews died and remained there. But as a nation we left Mitzrayim. We came out of Babylonia as a nation. We came out of Paras as a nation. We came out of the Shoah as a nation. We're still around. The Nazis are no longer around, at least not the ones that were then. And so too, many nations have come and gone, and we're still around. So obviously we have a special close connection to God. He's always there for us ultimately. And the second thing is we have a Torah that directs every aspect of our life, which means that every aspect of our life is important. So those two things are what makes us special and great. Nothing else. We're not the richest people in the world. The Saudi Arabians and Bill Gates have more money than all the Jews combined. We are not the strongest people, the most numerous people. We're not even the smartest people in the world. A lot of smart people out there. But these two things make us special. Idol worshippers take that in consideration. They may not like it. They may hate us for it. They may resent it. They may be jealous of us. They may think that we got these things undeserved. It doesn't make them like us, but they have to consider us something they don't like. An atheist, these two things are meaningless. We're close to God. They don't believe any gods. We have a Torah that makes life important. They don't believe in any right, wrong, good, bad. It's all accident. Accident, if there's no intelligent forces that control the world, then there's no intelligence in the world. If there's no intelligence, there's no purpose. If there's no purpose, there's no good, no bad, no right, no wrong. It's all accidental. Accidents by nature mean something that has no purpose, not purposeful. So there can't be any morals in this world. The only morals there can be is situational ethic. Don't step on my toes because I'll step on your toes and then there'll be anarchy. So we have to have rules. But there's no intrinsic value to this world. It's all an accident. So the things that make the Jewish people important don't apply, they don't exist in the vocabulary of an atheist, whereas they do by an idol worshiper. So basically, Amalek looks at us like nothing. And they're bothered by the fact that we are a nothing that thinks we're a something. So by going against Amalek and believing that there is a God, and God is involved in the world, He's involved in every aspect of our life, gives us two things. One, belief in God, that the world is not a haphazard, accidental place which is controlled by blind forces of economics and politics and social causes, but it's controlled by a God behind the scenes. That's one thing that we have against the atheist. And the second is that if there is a God and He is involved in everything, then we're very important, because that same God chose us and gave us a Torah that guides every aspect of our life. So our fight against Amalek is in two areas. One, to establish the fact that the world is not the product of blind forces and accidents, but it's guided by an intelligent God in every aspect, and that we're important because of that. Important in that context of being chosen by God and directed by God. Those are the two hallmarks. And I always like to say that that's where Amalek came from. Amalek's mother was Timnah. She was a princess and she wanted to marry into the Jewish people. And she came to Avram and he rejected her. Later on in life she came to Yitzchak and he rejected her. And later on she came to Yaakov and he rejected her. And the rabbis say they did the wrong thing. They shouldn't have rejected her completely. You see what happens when people are rejected completely, right? She ended up having Amalek. So Timnah was rejected, and she said, if I can't get into the front door of this family, I'll come to the back door with a black sheep. And she became a concubine to Esav's son, Eliphaz. And from them came Amalek. So Amalek's mother was Timna, who was rejected by the Jewish people, and his father was Eliphaz, Esav's son. We said atheism considers the Jewish people nothing, because our greatness is that God chose us and he gave us a Torah, and those don't exist in the vocabulary in atheists, so we're nothing in their eyes. And they also believe that it's might, power, money that controls the world, not a god or any intelligent forces. Whoever's for survival of the fittest, that's what evolution is all about. Whoever's stronger has control, has power. So now Amalek's mother was rejected by the Jewish people. What is the knee-jerk gut reaction to a rejection? Sour grapes. You don't want me, you're nobody. Because if you're somebody and you don't want me, then I was rejected by somebody. But if you're a nobody, then who rejected me? So Amalek had a psychological need to have a philosophy that made the Jewish people nothing in order to compensate for the fact that his mother was rejected by the Jewish people. And his father taught that, his grandfather taught that the sword runs the world. They live by the sword. Brute force. Eliphaz was more refined than his father. He didn't believe in brute force. He believed in money. That was his name. Eliphaz. My God is gold. And when he was sent to kill Yaakov, he took his money away. That was just the same as being dead. So if your father believes that it's money and power that run the world, and your mother was rejected by the Jewish people, the best philosophy you can have is atheism, which makes the Jewish people nobody, and believes that the world is controlled by brute forces. In any case, Purim was the same. What? Yeah, they had good education, but they used it the wrong way. The Purim, therefore, was a repeat. The Jewish people were not sure that God was with them, and therefore they were vulnerable to Haman, who was Amalek, who wanted to show them that there is no God. Everything is just chance. That's why he decided to destroy us by casting a lot. Poor, who are Gorol? Your Gorol, your destiny is just a poor, just a throw of a lot. And therefore, when we overpowered Haman, it was because we believed strongly that God didn't abandon us, and they davened and they fasted and they reaccepted the Torah. All of those things were reinforced, and then we overpowered Haman. So what is the bottom line lesson of Purim? There's a God who is constantly involved even if you can't see him. That's the reading of the Megillah. The Megillah shows that even though it appears to be just a plain story, God's name's not mentioned, but if you look at it, it's too much of a coincidence. There are too many coincidences there. You see God's hand behind the Megillah. And if God is involved behind the scenes with everything that happens, then we're very important people. Then we're very important people. That's the second lesson of Purim. And therefore, we give Shalach Manas, and we eat, if you're important, right? You know, some people say anorexia is a death wish. People don't consider themselves poor, no self-esteem. They don't want to make themselves more. They want to die. So they stop eating. The opposite is when you feel important. That doesn't mean you should overeat. But you make more of yourself. Right? I like myself so much, I want more of me. So, more the better, maybe. In any case, but that's, you know, that's eating. So that's the Suda Purim. And I'm not important because I'm me. I'm important because I'm a Jew. Give your neighbor to eat, too. Send him Shalach Manas. And we're not important because we're rich or whatever. We're important because we're Jews. Give the Ani, who has nothing, but he's a Jew too. Give him a present. Show that you consider it important. So Purim revolves around two things. One is the fact that there's a God who's involved in the world, opposite of what Amalek says, that the world is totally subject to blind forces and chance. And because of that, we are important as Jews. So Purim celebrates both things. And that's what it says. What's it? Lahodia. Right? The Shoshanis Yaakov, Tzahola v'Samecha, Birosam Yachad Tcheles Mordechai. Right? The people in Shushan rejoiced when they saw the Tcheles of Mordechai. Tcheles reminds me that there's God. Tcheles is like the Yam, and Yam is, you have to look into it. But you're reminded that God's behind the scenes. When they saw what happened to Mordechai, all the seemingly coincidences, they realize that God's behind the scenes and he's guiding the world. And then it says, what's it called, they had a belief that ultimately God would redeem us, and therefore even when we don't see that redemption, the sitvasam b'chol dor v'dor, but we have hope in every generation that God is, never abandons us. And even if things look bad, there's a reason for it. Even in the gullus, like we said in the beginning, you see God's hand. He never abandons us. Ultimately there'll be a geula, but in every generation you may not see it, but you should have hope because God never abandons you. There's hope. Lahodiyah, that teaches me a second lesson. Shekol kovecho lo yevoshu. We have nothing to be embarrassed about, ashamed about, right? Because we're important. If God is always there and he never abandons us, then we're pretty important, and therefore we have nothing to be ashamed of. And lo yikomol anesach, and not only that, we will not be insulted by others forever. On the short term, yeah, others will insult us. They won't realize our importance, but that won't be forever. Ultimately, even they'll realize how important we are. Kol ha'chosin b'ach. And therefore, there's rhyme and reason in the world. And the Rishayim deserve to be cursed, and the Tzaddikim deserve to be blessed, because there is morals in this world. There's right and there's wrong, and there's righteousness and there's evil, because it's an intelligent creator that created the world. And there's intelligence in the world, just not blind forces. And therefore, Arur Haman, and Baruch Mordechai, and Arura Zeresh, and Brucha Esther, right? And that is the Gan Harvona, everything that happens. Even somebody who's a little bit involved deserves also a what's called commendation, because there's a reason to choose right or wrong, because this world is an intelligent place. So that's what Purim is all about. Two things we're celebrating, and that's Simcha. The Simcha of knowing that the world is not Hefker, that there's a God in control that should bring a person a certain amount of satisfaction and feeling bitachon, of trust, and what's the word for bitachon? Feeling secure, security. Because you know that it's not a hefkervel. The maisa, we may not understand how the Rabban Shalom works, but ultimately everything's going to work out for the good. And the second lesson of Purim is, because there's a God and because he's involved and he considers us important, we're very important, so we celebrate our importance too. Those are the two things that Purim celebrates.